commandments, right?
No,
each addition to. Okay, is it all? Okay. Okay. Good morning, family. I'm an addict. My name is Art.
Hey, Art.
And I just can't explain in words how thankful I am for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, as an addict today, and recognizing it, my story is one of where I came here at 42 years old. No, I mean, I came here at 44, but, you know, I started smoking crack when I was 42. So I waited until I was that age to, you know, begin a period of insanity that only Narcotics Anonymous was able to extinguish just for today. And I keep coming back because through this process, I've learned through the literature and people like yourselves who have helped me through, each and every one of you, is that I learn more and more about recovery along with addiction on a day-to-day basis. You know, as I come to meetings and I get with my sponsor and I do the steps and I work with my support group and I just fellowship generally in the tradition in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous has given me an understanding of where I fit at in today's society. See, I came here in 1994 already thinking that I had a place in our society. I had a professional career in education. I had accomplished a lot of things in politics. I was a political analyst and a community developer. So, you know, I felt like I had cut out a niche in society, and I knew who I was and what my purpose was. But Narcotics Anonymous brought about another revelation for me because it allowed me to see another aspect of what I could do to help myself. And in the process, Narcotics Anonymous is like overwhelming me because it does things. It puts you in positions that, you know, I would never have imagined that I would be able to help somebody when I help myself. You know, it's just not like that in the real world. It's about helping you, getting ahead. I mean, you help people, but, you know, your prime purpose is to keep to help yourself first. Narcotics Anonymous changed that for me. When I help somebody, it helps me. That's what I'm trying to say. So, you know, that was a great thing for me. The second step is we came to believe the power greater than ourselves could deliver us to sanity. Well, my journey into addiction started whenever I was having problems in my marriage. I'd been married for approximately, I had been married approximately 16 years. And my wife and I had two kids. We started having problems. And I love my wife, you know. And we started having problems. And instead of relying on a God to help me solve those problems, I relied on the old traditional beliefs that our society perpetuates. And that is that if I'm a man, I'm going to intimidate my wife into submission. You're going to do what I say or else. You know what I'm saying? And my wife was a good person. She was not a bad person, man. But with this constant attack that I put on her, because she was doing some things, she was screwing some things up, but you know, once I started smoking crack and couldn't stop, her screw-ups weren't nothing compared to what I did. You know, so anyway, I'm trying to bludgeon her into submission verbally, and it even got physical. I have to admit that, and I'm totally wrong. And she just got worse. It's almost like whenever, you know, we as addicts, when people try to force us to do something, we just get worse. I know I did. So she just got worse. And this person that I had married 16 years previous, and who I loved, really loved, she had my back. She just turned into this person. She turned against me. And I still didn't get it. I still kept trying to use my will to make her change. And when she wouldn't change, and she left, and I was left with the kids and the house, it like really hurt me. Really hurt my feelings, and I didn't know what to do. So I did what eventually I learned that we as addicts all do, is I tried to kill the pain. And so I started, I'd always smoke weed, and I drank beer. And what I started to notice was, as I was having problems with my ex, the drinking and the smoking accelerated. So before I would drink and smoke weed, then I would stop. And I could get up the next morning, do what I had to do. But as my problems and pain increased, my using increased. And what it turned into is that I remember one Christmas distinctly. I remember my son, I had a son and a daughter. You know, my kids meant everything to me. I bought him this motorized trike, and you had to put it together. And I'm very good with my hands. You know, I consider myself, you know, a part-time mechanic. I mean, I could do stuff in my car. I could build things in the house. But I had smoked so much weed that Christmas Eve and drank, I couldn't even put the thing together. I had to call my brother, who is a mechanic, to come over. And he put it together for me. And I should have known then, like, I'm going too far. But it just continued. The other thing that I did is I started to substitute sex because my relationship wasn't right. So I started going out in the street, and I would get with these women. And these women would, like, do things to me and do things for me. And I would say, they're fucked up. Like, these people are fucked up, you know. They were smoking crack, you know. But it's just like, this is why I love this program. I became those people, you know. I got fucked up, man. I had no chance because, you know, I didn't have a guard. I was totally insane. Once, and it didn't matter what I had accomplished. I mean, I was on 3 boards. I'd been on my job 18 years. I got the highest, ratings, evaluations. I was a political analyst. I had like 3 candidates that I worked for. They all won. They were all in office. They did me favors. I got people in my community jobs. I got people that I knew. Jobs with my employer, and through the grace of God, I still work here. This is my 35th year. It's only through this program I can say that. And so I got people jobs, man. I had prestige. I had money and I had property. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop, you know. When I started smoking crack, I said, I'm 42 years old. I'm from the projects. I grew up in the projects. So, you know, you grew up in the projects, you're supposed to be tough. I don't know if you can relate to that. So I said, you know, I grew up in the projects. I can deal with this pipe. I had this big-ass pipe. I call it a Big Bertha. And I was putting 20s on that. And I'm talking this crazy shit. And these people would sit around. They would look at me. And they would say, like, I mean, I didn't hear them, but now today I know what they're saying. This dude is crazy. You know, so anyway, I'm smoking this crack, man, and, you know, I was off to the races. And it didn't take long before I couldn't go to work no more. I was just holed up in my house. And see, I had 220 20 sick days. So I could literally take off a whole year and be paid. And I made good money. So and my boss loved me. He loved me. He trusted me. And you know, he's an Italian. He was white. See, that's another part of my story. You know how Narcotics Anonymous allowed me to see the importance of the content of your character, not the color of your skin. So anyway, my boss, he said, "Art, what's wrong with you?" Like I'm telling you, I'm smoking crack. So anyway, I said, "I'm depressed." He believed me because he wasn't an addict. He didn't know. He loved me. You know, we had started this program together and going up to Harrisburg and going to Washington, D.C. to get funds. And we kind of built this program from the ground. So he trusted me, man. He trusted my judgment, man. And because my addiction, my attitude, my ideas, and my behaviors had kicked in, I was a liar. I was deceitful. And my whole purpose was to get the next one. So he told me, he said, "Just stay home. Call off every day or call off every week and just stay home until you get better." That's how much he liked me. And he thought of my skills. So that's what I did. And every day I called off at first. Then I started calling off every week and I got high every day because I was getting a paycheck. The dope man was living in the house. So for a whole year I lived like that. But I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. You know. I sold the dining room suit. I sold the washer. I sold the dryer. I sold the refrigerator. I sold the microwave. You know. I had two cars. You know what happened to them? They were gone. You know, I couldn't stop. You know, and it was real ugly. And the people in the neighborhood who respected me, because I was the committee man also. You know, committee man in our democratic system is the person that lives on the block, who's whatever party you're affiliated with, is responsible to educate the people in the district, their district, about the party's policies of what you can accomplish. So, I mean, you know, I got kids summer jobs. I got people jobs at the University of Pittsburgh's Medical Center, because that's where I lived at. And, like, to see me smoking crack, like, that blew their mind. Like, what the hell is wrong with him? Because they would see these people coming into out of my house. They say, uh-oh, something is wrong, man. So, you know, like I said, despite all my accomplishments, nothing could stop me but Narcotics Anonymous. So, I threw in the towel in May of 1994. I was hearing things. I had on two pair of pants. I had a beard. And I weighed 118 pounds. I went to St. Francis Hospital. You know, and that's when I was introduced to this program in the steps. And the second step became very instrumental for me because I had to try to get this understanding with a God, you know, that I felt could deliver me to sanity. And the day, now I have 6 years clean. I'll have 6 years clean September the 18th. And today, I put that God first. That's what I see. That's what I didn't do, you know, at first. Because when I got there in 1994, I stayed clean for like 7 months. And then I went out and got me some sex. And I put the sex first, and I relapsed. And I kept doing that, you know. Or I would go out, you know, I still had my job. I'd buy a car and get a few paychecks under my belt and have a couple $1,000s in my checking account and go out and get high. Wasn't focusing on God, you know, and when I finally did really take that step, you know, in earnest, one of the things that did it was that in Narcotics Anonymous, for me, this is not a joke. You know, this is not a comedy routine, as far as I'm concerned. I like to have fun, but when it comes to my recovery, I focus on it first. Take a look at what I'm supposed to do, and then I do it. You know, and the blessing of that is that you know, I lost a lot, you know, materially and professionally. I mean, like right now, if I not get high, I could be the director of the program that I work for. If I not get high, I could maybe be the state representative, elected representative from the 26th legislative district. That's a lot of power. It's a lot of prestige. You know, but as I was telling my buddy Dale as we were riding up here, you know, people would say, man, how do you feel that you lost all that? I said, well, I feel today that I accept that because I used. See, when people ask you that, if they're not an addict, they don't understand. I was trying to kill myself. You know, just like it says in that step, man, I was trying to kill myself, you know, one pill at a time. And in my case, it was one hit at a time and one day at a time and one week at a time. I was trying to kill myself. So I feel good today. You know, I always tell people, you know, one thing I learned is that a lot of people that aren't addicts, they're trying to stay out of hell or stay, you know, hope that they, you know, don't go to hell. Well, I was in hell. So I know what it's like. So I have a better understanding of how to maneuver, you know, and to deal with my ideas, attitudes, and behaviors, which is my addiction, so that I don't go back to hell again. You know, this, you know, this program, like I said, has been so good to me in that way. So, anyway, I kept using. And in 2004, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I said, well, I got to stop dealing in relationships because when I do that, it takes the focus. And I end up putting the relationship before God, putting the relationship before my meeting, before my home group, before working my steps. And I just go right back to using. You know, I had undoubtedly surrendered and believed that, you know, the God of my understanding was the only thing that was going to deliver me to sanity. And I started at that point. Staying out of relationships. I didn't have sex for 4 years. People say, you know, they weren't in a relationship for 4 years. I didn't have no sex for 4 years, and I wasn't in no relationship. And I got closer to my home group, my support group, my sponsor, and my step work. And before I knew it, the obsession was lifted. And you know, I am ever so grateful for that. And, you know, like, I really understand what people say when they say that your gratitude shows the N.A. way, which means that, you know, you take action. You try to give back what was freely given to you. And then what comes to mind, you know, to be able to stand here this morning, it almost brings tears to my eyes because I grew up during the 60s. During the time of black power and black consciousness, you know, where black people were starting to know who they are and why they're here and what their history was. And it drew a lot of anger. There was a lot of racial problems in the 60s. Some of you might not know because some of you look kind of young. But the thing is that the one thing that helped, you know, quell the racial unrest was God. Martin Luther King was a Christian. And people of other races and religions came together, you know, to bring peace, to bring about peace. And what I found was that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it wasn't just black people, it was white people, it was Hispanic people, it was wherever I was at. Those people came together with a guard of their understanding, and, you know, it brought peace to our hearts. And we learned how to get along with each other. Where race didn't make a difference, you know. And again, man, this Narcotics Anonymous thing is overpowering. You know, when I look at how far it brought me in my understanding of society, because you know, having learned that my people were slaves in this country and how they were brought here, you know, and the things that happened to them when they were here in the institution of slavery, the lynchings and the injustice. And the only thing that can soften your heart, you know, or the most profound thing that can soften your heart is God. You know, and have you understand that, you know, if you act the same way, things are only going to get worse. Things are only going to get worse. When I was out there getting high, I became that person. Remember I said I picked them girls up and they did some things to me? I mean, I didn't do the sexual stuff, but it could have happened. Because my sponsor used to ask me, he said, "You ever been fucked in the ass?" Because I kept getting high. I said, "Fucked in the ass? I don't do that shit." Man, let me tell you something. Hey, if I'd have kept going, I'd have got fucked in the ass. That's how bad it was. You know, so, you know, I mean, this stuff just, God just made this stuff happen for me. I don't know, they say this is a miracle. It's absolutely a miracle. It made me understand a lot of things that I didn't understand. You know, so, you know, and when it came to this racial thing, what it makes me understand today is, you know, you can talk all this bullshit you want about race and gender and what have you, but if we don't work together, if we don't all provide some kind of positive input to this society, and, you know, being here in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm trying to provide a positive input. I'm trying to be fair and understanding to every people. I don't care what their situation is. Black, white, gay, straight. It don't matter. This is about trying to stop this disease and the way it has destroyed our lives, man, and the impact it's had on society. You know, I can remember in 1963, I remember I was 13 years old. My grandfather, who I deeply admire, he was kind of like my father because I never knew who my father was. You know, he's a steel worker from McKeesport. That's all he knew was work. He took me down to hear John Kennedy give this speech. And one of the things John Kennedy said, it's not what your country can do for you. It's what you can do for your country. And that's, to me, I equate that with, what we do in Narcotics Anonymous is that we freely give back what was given to us. You know, so this program allows me to take what I've learned here and not only do it here, but also do it in the large society that I live in. And, man, that's some powerful stuff right there because, you know, like when I'm out on my job or I'm out doing, I still do stuff with peace and justice groups. Like I'm in a group now, we're protesting the war in the Middle East. And, you know, again, we got gays, we got straights, we got people who are very religious, we got people that don't believe in God. And we're all putting it together and for one common cause, like we do here. And they say, well, how come you don't argue with me about me not believing in God? I got friends who are professors, and they say that. I said, well, when pain gets great enough, because the first thing they do when they have a problem, they say, oh, my God. Look at me. I thought you didn't believe in God. You know, so I say, one thing this program taught me is how to be patient. You know, and if you get that, you know, if you give it to God, as far as my story is concerned, it becomes clear on what I should do. You know, so we have a guy in Pittsburgh, and he says that if I say more than 20 words, I'll be vented. You know, so I want to stop right now while I'm ahead. I want to thank everybody. OK.
Okay, the next speaker we'll have David G. from Butler, Pennsylvania, speaking on tradition too.
Thanks, dear. Hey, everybody, I'm an addict named David.
Hi.
I really enjoyed what Art had to say, and maybe I'm a little older than I look, but my young years were in the 60s, and when I'd be watching television, and I'd see, like, stuff happening in the Haight, and I'd be saying, well, I wish I was there with the flower power people, and you know, I kind of related to that, and things that you know, the peace movement was saying, and when Martin Luther King would say, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, I identified with that as well. And you know, my father had told me about how prejudiced he was when he was a young man, and then as he went into the military and got to serve with people of different backgrounds, how his heart and his mind opened up. So I kind of came into the world at a good time as far as what we talk about here, where we say in our reading that basically we don't care who you are, what you are, where you came from. We just care about what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. And so when I got here, and I actually my clean date is 12/19/04, and I had some background, like a period of time from the early 2002 till the mid of 03 before I did my experiment, you know, my further research, where I started in service as the secretary of my home group. I fell into a group of people that are all about service. And so I learned from early in my recovery that if I was serving at my home group, if I was putting down chairs, if I was making coffee, if I was greeting people at the door, that I was helping to create an atmosphere of recovery. It was interesting to hear Art talk about his professional background, because I too had a, you know, I worked at a bank. I had done nonprofit administration. I had worked with an accounting firm and built databases for law firms. And I had all this background, okay? And I had all these successes in my life. And none of them really meant anything to me. I didn't have a success in my life that wasn't viewed through the prism of some drug. You know, I when I would accomplish something at work, the answer was to celebrate at the bar, or to get myself an extra quarter ounce, right? Or eventually then, I also met crack cocaine in my, actually it was my late 30s, and I remember that's how I celebrated my 40th birthday. It was I saved up and bought myself like an extra amount, right? You know, just so I could really celebrate. I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I found that relief from the pain, and I found my restoration to sanity in the second step, and I did my service in my home group, and then they said, okay, you got some clean time, now be our group's GSR, group service representative, and off I went to area service, and I had heard it called Area Circus. And it sounded scary. It sounded like not the kind of business meeting I wanted to be at, because I was used to professional business meetings, right? And so I showed up there, and I heard the concepts of NA service, the 12 concepts. And I heard that 12th one that said our structure should always be one of service, never of government. And I thought, huh, wow, that's interesting. You know, what a concept, right? And then I read this second tradition that says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Well, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there. One ultimate authority, a loving God. Okay. No constitution. No bylaws. No president. Who's going to tell people when they're screwing up, right? What is the, who's God? What God? Saying what? On what day? Okay, all these questions come into my mind. And as I watch the, meeting unfold, sometimes it runs really smoothly and there is accord in the room. Okay, there is a, you know, it's clear what the direction is. And then something hits the fan. I highlighted a few things in our basic text about this tradition, and the first line, the first paragraph, in Narcotics Anonymous, we are concerned with protecting ourselves from ourselves. By nature, we are strong-willed, self-centered people who are thrust together in NA. We are mismanagers, and not one of us is capable of consistently making good decisions. Okay? Now, here's the thing, okay? I'm a pretty smart guy, okay? And I can usually solve problems pretty quickly. I think fast. And I solve fast. And I make decisions fast. And I move forward. And the problem I found out when I worked my sixth and my fourth step through my seventh step is that, you know, my problem is that oftentimes I'm right about that decision, okay? And I want you to just accept my decision because then we can move on, okay? Because I got the answer, okay? You know, trust me, I'm the government, I'm here to help, okay? But a lot of times people don't agree with me. And that's, you know, that's their problem, right? No, that's our problem. That's my problem, is that I'm trying to run the show. As time has gone along, I moved from being my group service representative to taking a position as our area's regional committee member. Okay, so now I step up to a new level of diversity sitting in the room, a new level of experience, you know, a new level of the requirement for patience and open-mindedness. Okay, some people express themselves in a way where they take 1,000 words to say what could be said in 20, and to have the patience to sit and listen. Okay, that's a skill that I learned. A loving God moving in the room is that I'm suspending my judgment over what somebody is saying, and I'm closing my eyes, and I'm listening to the words, and I'm trying to hear the spirit and not the personality, the principles behind what they're saying. There is often a vast difference between group conscience and group opinion as dictated by powerful personalities or popularity. There's, you know, if you think that I can overpower a room, there's a person in my area who will just scream people into submission. And you know, has at certain periods forced a decision or a point of view on our area's group conscience. And, you know, when people in the room, you know, oftentimes now, the people in service in my area are young in recovery. They don't have the experience, and they don't have the legs to stand up to something like that, to the onslaught, to the barrage, to the to the powerful personality. The funny thing is, the person isn't popular; they're just powerful. Okay. And now, I didn't know, I got asked to do this last night, and I didn't know that in the program, the spiritual principle that was attached to this tradition was faith. Okay, but it's really interesting, because when I'm in a room and that happens, and I'm shaking out of anger and out of frustration, when the group makes a decision that I just know in my heart and my spirit is wrong, I have to have the faith that Narcotics Anonymous is going to survive this miscarriage of justice. We have learned, this is basic text again, we have learned that for our fellowship, leadership by example and by selfless service works. Direction and manipulation fail. Okay? So, no, selfless service. Okay, I want, when I got asked to speak, right, okay, so I want now to be the star of this show, and I want all of my support group to be down here in this shelter listening to me spout my words of wisdom. They're all up eating breakfast. I'm not that important. Okay, and you know, yes, I'm bitter and resentful, but I'm going to get over it, right? Because I worked some steps. And I know that this is about, you know, this is going on tape, and maybe some person, sometime, someday, is going to listen to this and is going to find some peace about something that they're going through in service. Now, direction and manipulation fail. Okay, I apply this principle in my work and in a service, and I also apply it in my life. Okay, like I, one of the things I've been blessed to do in my life in recovery is find out that there's an area of work that I really like, and I started a business doing it. And I have these people who, I mean, they have me do work for them, and then they write me a check. And it's a fabulous thing. And but if I go in and I tell them what they should do, and if I go in and I say, no, 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 what you want is wrong, you know, you don't want that tree there, you want it over here, and you really don't want to have that patio there, you want it over here. You know what? If I direct them and tell them that they're wrong and I'm right, they don't hire me. I don't get paid. I don't, you know, I don't serve them. I'm not doing, you know, direction and manipulation fail. Okay? Now, I can give them a point of view, and I can tell them why I think it might be better to do X, Y, or Z. But if they don't agree with me, then, you know, either I get flexible or I move on. And if the only time that I will move on is if I think that I can't fill what, you know, I can't fill their expectation. So, applying this principle in my life, direction and manipulation fail. But in the rooms of, in service rooms and in Narcotics Anonymous, it's about selfless service. I'm doing this so that no addict seeking recovery need ever die. And at the end of a long area service committee, that's usually how, if I'm asked to close the meeting, that's usually what I say, is let's remember why we are here. That no addict seeking recovery need ever die. Egos, unfounded pride, and self-will destroy a group if given authority. That speaks for itself. Some will resist. However, many will become the role models for the newcomers. That's what people did for me, okay? I'm blessed that the people that I just sort of fell in with, I, you know, stumbled unknowingly into a group of people, some of whom had been in workshops writing the It Works How and Why book, you know, some of whom have you know, been in service and done public information for years, and you know, can really help me understand the traditions, can really give me the background of, like, what are the spiritual principles, what were the mistakes that were made that led these things to be written. And then I can learn that, and I can carry that on. I can live through example and be a role model for a newcomer. So, what always amazes me is that, you know, it says, true spiritual principles are never in conflict. They complement each other. That's the bottom line. When there is, you know, when all of the arguments have been presented and all of the points of view have been heard, and finally there's, it's kind of like, you know, the ultimate group conscience is there doesn't have to be a vote. There's just this quiet peace in the room, and everybody just knows that that's what we do. That's what we're going to do. But when there's a vote, when there's still, you know, when I don't get my way, this tradition tells me that, you know, Narcotics Anonymous is not wrong. The God in the room is not wrong. If God wasn't in the room and able to survive, I will survive. Karma's a bitch. Oh, excuse me, that's not spiritual. We can always change our decision if we realize that it wasn't the best one. Our leaders are but trusted servants, and they do not govern. That's all I got. Thank you very much for listening.
Okay, then.
Okay, we want to thank the speakers.
Thank you. Thank you.
We want to thank the speakers for speaking, and it was an honor to hear the speakers. Could we have the Just for Today?
Okay, good morning. My name is William. I'm at Just for Today. Tell yourself, Just for Today, my thoughts will be on recovery, liberty, joy, and life of the Jesus Christ. Just for Today, I will have faith in someone in an age who believes in me. Wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program or try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get better for the purpose of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new association, people are not using you as my new way of life.
So that way, just for today.
Okay, we got a nice way of closing.